This is the Andy Pollin Hour. On Washington's new home for sports. ESPN 630, the sports capital.
Tony's coming up at 11 o'clock today. Tony on a Tuesday, and he's talking to Mitch Albom about his new book. So that should be a very, very interesting conversation coming up at 11 o'clock. Bram Weinstein will join me at 10:20 to talk about the bizarre football game last night, which Washington wins three straight. And it is on for the month of December and into January with five division games coming up after Sunday's game at Las Vegas. Update, no Sly. Joey Sly, for 3 weeks, according to Ron Rivera on his radio show today, says Sly has a hamstring injury, which is going to keep him out a minimum of 3 weeks. So there will be a kicking caravan likely today in Ashburn. They expect to have somebody signed in time for the game at Vegas. Also on the bizarre front this morning to talk about, not just the game, but this popped up on Twitter within the last hour. Robert Griffin III, who seems to have his nose pressed against the glass for a team to sign him, and we've seen all kinds of quarterbacks go down this year, and nobody is ringing RG3's phone. So this morning he revealed this. He's got a book. This is RG3's announcement.
What's up, guys? I'm so excited to announce that I wrote a book, and it's coming out in August 2022, titled Surviving Washington. Now, every experience that I've ever had has made me a better husband, a better father, and a better player. But I want you to take this journey with me as I walk you through one of the most dysfunctional franchises in all of sports. I'm going to tell you the truth about what happened in that playoff game in 2012 against Seattle. I'm going to detail the medical mismanagement that I received during my time in Washington. I'm going to open your eyes to the sexual harassment that permeated the walls of that building and give you a deep dive into a power struggle between one of the most powerful coaches in all of sports and an owner that many of you want gone. They say the truth will set you free. So here it is, unfiltered. Pre-order now.
Interesting. so much to go through there, and I haven't read it. Anxious to read it. Medical mismanagement. Some of that may have been related to you because... As I've heard from a number of different sources, that after he hurt his knee, Haloti Ngata blew him up on a play over the middle against Baltimore, and Kirk Cousins pulled that game out in overtime. Griffin was out for what they said was a 1 to 4 week injury, and he didn't practice all week leading up to the Cleveland game. And they decided that they were going to start Kirk Cousins because Cousins has taken all the practice reps and the game plan was put in place for him. If you remember, Griffin came out on the field in pregame warmups and ran all over the place. And as I was told, with this owner, who he's now ready to rip, and he's not alone, but he's now ready to rip, he went with the owner to Mike Shanahan and said, "We're ready to play." And Shanahan said, "No, I can't play you. I've got a game plan in place. Kirk has practiced all week. You haven't practiced. We're going to start Kirk. You're inactive." And he didn't like that. And he went and watched the game with his dad. And they decided that they were trying to sabotage his career, the Shanahans were, and that they wanted Kirk Cousins to play. Medical mismanagement. Let's fast forward to the Seattle playoff game where it was pretty clear, and he said it in a clip that's since been deleted, was put out by NFL Films, that he told Trent Williams, "Hey, I hurt my knee. Don't tell anybody." And he stayed in the game. And if you watch the game, you saw him dragging his leg behind him on a run. I mean, he was clearly compromised, but he refused to come out of the game. And as I was told, Mike Shanahan went to him and said, "We're going to make a change at the half." And he went crazy. He went ballistic. He insisted on playing. And he insisted on playing until his leg blew up and had major surgery. Now, some of the other things that are in there, who knows? But this is a he said type of book. And maybe there's a lot of truth in it. Maybe there isn't. But coming from the source that it's coming from right now, from all we know, what went on with Griffin during the year he was here in 2012, followed by the 3 years that followed, let's see, he was here 2013 and 14 and also 15 when he was inactive. So he was here for a total of 4 years, really was a full-time starter for only one, and then played parts of other seasons and didn't play at all in his final season. So this is really interesting. But here's a guy who needs attention. He's got to have attention, and this is the best way to get it. And yes, I'm taking the bait because I'm interested in it. I lived it. I followed it every step of the way. And what he's telling you is he's going to blow the lid off the entire organization. Now, a lot of people want to know what goes on behind the scenes. He left here after the 2015 season. Maybe he saw some things that we don't know about and he'll reveal, but I'm anxious to read this book. And that was a Twitter wow this morning from Robert Griffin III. Bram's coming up at 10:20. I'll run that by him when he comes on. Meantime, let's get back to some of the big plays from the game last night. And talked about this with Trevor Maddich about the transformation of Landon Collins, who wants to be a safety. But at this point in his career, coming off a torn Achilles, which kept him out the second half of last season, and at his age, he's not that fast anymore. And they have turned him into what they call a Buffalo nickel. And at the Buffalo nickel position, he has thrived. And I don't think it's a coincidence that the defense has thrived along with him. And I thought this was one of the key plays of the game. It's late first half. Heinicke has thrown an interception. They're already down 7-3 to Seattle. So if they put together a drive here and they go up 14-3 at the end of the half, it's going to be looking really bad for Washington in the second half, because the way they've been winning is putting together these long, sustained drives. It's not conducive to a big comeback. And so if they're able to come down the field and score a touchdown before the half and it's 14-3, it's probably going to be a really different second half than it was in the first half. But Collins, playing linebacker, makes a play on Collins.
Wilson has to escape a pocket that collapses, dumps it off underneath Alex Collins. Popped out by Landon Collins. Ball is loose. There are four burgundy jerseys on the ground, and they've got a fumble. Big turnover for Washington's defense.
And, as I take a sip of water here, that turned out to be huge, because off of that turnover, they were able to get a touchdown pass before the end of the first half. Only 56 seconds left to go. J.D. McKissic scores on a 10-yard pass from Taylor Heinicke. Now, everything totally changed off the extra point, which we'll get to. But more on Collins. This is Ron Rivera, and I think he sizes up the situation that Collins is in and what he now means to the football team.
He's doing the things that we feel that he has perfect skill set for, and that's the Buffalo, the big nickel position. It's really just a drop down safety. So if you guys say that once in a while, he'll be happy. But you know, it's what he really is. He's the drop down safety that's already in the box. You see it. You see on those short underneath passes how physical he is as a tackler. You know how he's around the ball. He's a good blitzer coming off the edge for us. Very heady player, knocked that ball loose, and we were able to recover it. I mean, that's the kind of production that position needs, and it's a position that's going to play. If there are 60 plays, it's going to play at least 50, 55 of those plays. So, you know, the guy's done a great job for us.
Yeah, I mentioned the name Sua Cravens in the last hour. They drafted Sua Cravens in the second round out of USC in 2016, and that's the position they said he was going to fit, the big safety slash linebacker. He was a hybrid, they called him. 6'1", 224 pounds, and he had a concussion in his first year, and there were some issues where he accused the team of lying, and you know, just ended badly. He only played 11 games here, sat out a year, played 5 games for Denver, and then was done in the league. But that's the position they said was going to be a game changer for the defense. And willingly or unwillingly, Landon Collins is playing it, and I think has changed this defense in such a big way. And as Trevor told us in the last hour, their linebacking core isn't really good. I mean, Jamin Davis was their first pick. He's still learning the position. They've got some other guys who are pretty good. I don't think they have Pro Bowl level linebackers. I think Cole Holcomb is a pretty decent linebacker. But when he plays that big nickel position, that changes things dramatically. And he's a little slow to be a safety, but fast for a linebacker. And that's making a huge difference
for them. This is the play of the game. This is the play you'll be hearing over and over as the day goes on, and I'm sure ESPN will run it as part of their coverage, and Bram will talk about this quite a bit on his show. But this is how basically the game ended. This was after the touchdown that Seattle got to Freddie Swain, 32-yard pass from Russell Wilson. He was wide open in the middle of the goal line. I don't know what kind of defense they were in, but he was wide open. Score a touchdown. They got the momentum. And if they get the two-point conversion, they're going to overtime. And Washington doesn't have a kicker. So, you know, even if you get to overtime, you're playing with one hand tied behind your back. So you've got to make a stop on this two-point conversion. And if you don't, the feeling is all the air is out of the balloon and Seattle finds a way to win the game. But Kendall Fuller steps up.
Wilson. Right leg up and down, takes the snap. Plenty of time, surveying, looks over the middle. That is thrown into the end zone and is picked off. Kendall Fuller picked it off. And Washington maintains their lead. Now they just need to survive a kickoff.
Yeah, and that was a little hairier than it should have been because Seattle did recover the onside kick, but as it turned out, the alignment was wrong. There was a player that was offsides according to the way the new rules work, and so they got a second shot, and Washington recovered and was able to take the knee and put the game away. Watching on the sidelines and the ESPN cameras spent a lot of time focused on Taylor Heinicke. He was grabbing at his hat. He was nervous. He's watching this last drive. This is what was going through his mind.
A little scary because you've seen Russell do that throughout his career. And, of course, he goes down and scores a touchdown. And, you know, Kendall made a great play on that two-point conversion. But, again, you know, kind of, you know, rewinding back, you've seen Russell do that for the last 10 years. And, you can never count him out.
No. I mean, especially the way he was able to just drive down the field. He'd done nothing. He was a bad quarterback for most of the game. That last drive, he was terrific, I think partially because of the defense that they were in, this prevent, and partially because he's Russell Wilson. He managed to get it going at that point. Now, as for where Washington is, 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, dead, completely dead. With three straight wins, they have now moved into the number eight spot for the playoffs. There are eight teams that make it, so they would be in on that third wild card. And they have an opportunity with everything in front of them to win the division. It's right there for them. Now, are they going to win the last six games? No, probably not. But they have an opportunity to beat the teams they need to beat in front of them to do that. And if they can take care of Las Vegas and their 2.5-point underdogs heading into that game on Sunday, if they can take care of Vegas, then they got Dallas twice, Philadelphia twice, and the Giants to end the season. This is Ryan Clark, played for the team. His analysis last night with Scott Van Pelt on ESPN.
They have themselves in the fight, and they're kind of right in that position that everyone was excited that the Philadelphia Eagles were in last week. They were in a position to make a run because they had NFC East teams down the line. That's exactly what Washington has. You have a quarterback who's going to give you an opportunity to win because he's going to play his heart out. Mm-hmm. You have a defense that's playing better now that Landon Collins has moved to linebacker, and you have some playmakers on the outside. The running back situation now with McKissick out, that could be a thing. But the Washington football team is right there in the fight, and they have an opportunity down the stretch.
We don't know about McKissick yet. We probably won't get an injury update on him until tomorrow. But they did have to cart him off the field. It may be a head injury, and I guess he would go into concussion protocol. And with a short week with a game on Sunday against Vegas, I don't think that the possibilities of him playing are great. But they have managed to find other guys to step up and play. And Antonio Gibson had the best game of his career. He had 111 yards rushing. So they probably can still win without him. Also, if you're just jumping in your car and you have not heard, Ron Rivera revealed on his radio show today that Joey Sly is going to be out for at least 3 weeks with a hamstring injury, so there'll be a fourth kicker in for this upcoming game. Lewis Riddick spent some time in the front office with Washington, did the game last night on ESPN with Brian Griese and Steve Levy. This was his assessment of where Washington is right now.
What you're finding out now is that this team believes. It believes that if it fights to the very end, good things are going to happen for it, and that mindset is something that you need when it comes down to the end of the season, and when you have every game being a must-win type of game, that's really going to be a 60-minute fought type of contest. This team has the right DNA. They have the right makeup. They're built the right way. They run the football. They play physical. They have a quarterback right now who can make plays when it's not all right. They have a head coach who's just patient and stoic. So a lot of the things are in place for this football team from a mentality standpoint and from a physical makeup standpoint for them to do some damage. And I would not count this team out in any of their games going forward.
Hmm. So that's, you know, they're already underdogs for Vegas, but they have a possibility of winning all the games that remain on the schedule. And the thing about running the football, I think this is maybe overblown, especially with the way the field conditions are now. Remember when Washington played Seattle in that playoff game in 2012, the field was, as some players refer to it, trash. It was a mess. Looked really good last night. So that might not be as big a factor, but you got, over the last six games, the possibility of three bad weather games. They play Dallas here on December the 12th. Then they play at Philadelphia the following week. And they play Philadelphia again on January 2nd, actually four of them. And then at the Giants on January 9th. So if you can run the ball and the weather is bad, that can be an advantage for you. And they have proven that they can run the ball and eat up the clock and play the style of football that made the NFC East famous back in the 80s. Bill Parcells and Joe Gibbs playing that style. Let me spend a minute or two on Max Scherzer before we get to Bram. You've heard now that he's signed this contract with the Mets, 3 years for $130 million, value of more than $43 million a year. And on top of that, he can pitch for him for 2 years and then opt out. At 39, if he says, I'd like to leave, he can leave. Or he can use that as leverage by saying to the Mets, hey, you just gave me a three-year deal. I want you to add 3 years more at another $130 million. But here are the numbers Jeff Passan put out on the deal. His contract, $43.3 million. The entire payroll of the Pittsburgh Pirates is $40.2 million. The entire payroll of the Orioles is $37 million. So just Scherzer alone, more than $6 million more than the Pirates. And he's just behind the Cleveland Guardians, used to be the Indians, $46.7 million, and the Mariners, which, you know, been a pretty good team, $57 million. But they got an owner who wants to spend some money. Barry Zwerluga wrote a column about this today, and I think he captures what a lot of us feel about Scherzer. This is not the same thing as Bryce Harper, who got booed when he came back. I think Scherzer will get cheered. He did a great job here. When he goes in the Hall of Fame, you hope he goes in as a National. So far, it's the only championship team that he's played on. And he says about Scherzer, this is a couple of paragraphs here. He says, in signing with the Mets, Scherzer goes from the symbol of what made the Nationals strong and intimidating for so long indeed. Those were his brown and blue eyes staring down above right field to a symbol of what this stepping stone this club has become. Harper is gone, was just named National League MVP in another uniform. Anthony Rendon is gone. Trey Turner is gone. Scherzer was already gone, but with the Mets, there'll be a more daily reminder of whom he departed for, which is, of course, another long-winded way of saying use this offseason to sign Juan Soto, which has been Barry's big push. And I think we look back at him and we will say, thank you, Max. You gave us everything you had for the years that you were here. You were a big part of the World Series championship team. You'll always have a home here. And, it's going to be tough seeing you maybe five times a year pitching for the Mets, but we'll always have 2019. It's unfortunate that the follow-up to that isn't what it could have been because of the pandemic. We didn't get the full celebration of the following year. And then the following year, Scherzer doesn't get a chance to try and get them back to the World Series. And same thing with Trey Turner. And it's, 2 years later, it's all gone. It was here and gone. Coming up, Bram will talk more about the Washington football game last night as we continue. It's the Andy Pollin Hour, ESPN 630. Tony's coming up at 11 o'clock. Bram Weinstein, the voice of the Washington football team, is with us. If you have not yet checked Bram Robert Griffin III's Twitter feed today, I urge you to do that because he has announced a new book that will come out in August called Surviving Washington, where he says he will tell the truth about everything that happened, including in that playoff game, medical mismanagement, dysfunction in the organization, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I bet you are as excited to read this book as I am.
Didn't he say he wanted to come play here 2 weeks ago?
Yeah. I guess that door closed, didn't it?
I mean, wow. Wow, that boy, there's a change of heart.
Yeah.
Well, they didn't take him up on that offer.
Yeah.
His book would be coming out in the middle of the season.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah, Simon and Schuster is putting it out. And, you know, maybe 3 weeks ago, people might have been more interested in reading it. But the dysfunction is sort of in the rearview mirror at the moment. It could rear its ugly head again. But, man, I mean, they're finding ways to win and without a kicker. I mean, they didn't have a backup kicker. They had no kicker. The kicking option was removed on what is one of the most pivotal extra points I can ever remember. It turned a certain 10-7 game into a 9-9 game and basically made Washington play with one hand behind its back the rest of the game.
Yeah, they had no choice. I think the trickiest part of it is that Tressway is a lefty.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, he's also the holder, which means it'd have to be a different holder who's holding the ball off snaps from a lefty kicker.
Yeah.
And if my understanding is, you know, they were trying Kyle Allen doing it and they thought it would be a disaster. So they felt that their best path forward for the rest of the game was to not kick the ball. You know, so I think it's less, especially at the end of the game when they had a chip shot opportunity,
mm-hmm.
You know, I think it's less about whether Way could have made it or not. I don't think they thought they would have got the snap down. And, you know, considering they already had one horrible play occur to them on special teams, the last thing they needed was something that completely turned the game upside down. And frankly, I mean, Logan Thomas is a bobble away from none of the stuff happening at the end of the game mattering anyway.
That's true, and that's, you know, that's an instant replay debate which we can get into. Rivera actually said after the game that he checked with Nate Kayser and asked if they could do a drop kick, and he said no. But he said he was serious about that. You know, Doug Flutie did it. The other thing is, and I'll give you my old guy take on this. I saw this 1974. Mark Mosley, a sore leg as they headed into the playoffs. They wanted to rest him. So Deacon Jones kicked the last extra point in a blowout of the Bears. I mean, it wasn't a pressure situation. But my God, if Deacon Jones can kick an extra point, can't you find somebody to do it? It just seems crazy.
I agree. I mean, I think the only one, maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, because Way would still be the holder at that point. So is there anybody else on the team that can kick a chip shot field goal? And that's an interesting question to ask.
Yeah. And
it felt like that they decided that Way was going to the kickoffs. But there was the only – it seems like they just decided that they were going to have him kick field goals if they were necessary. But him being left-footed, I think, actually complicated it. So I agree with you. You know, was there somebody on there who could have attempted a short field goal? And then, you know, I don't know, secondarily, you know, if that, I don't know, you run out, whoever it is, mm-hmm. you know, Logan Thomas or, you know, Shaka Toney or whoever, try to kick a field goal and he shanks it badly or whiffs on the ball or hurts himself. And then all of a sudden it's more egg on your face for him. So I guess in the end, they just felt like they had no real choice but to play, you know, football from 1932.
Exactly. We're talking to Bram Mindset. Also, Rivera revealed on his radio show today that Sly's out for at least 3 weeks. So I hope for your sake they give you a pronounceable name when whoever they sign as their fourth kicker of the year.
I'm going to go if it's not Blewett. Yeah, this is a weird one. Four kickers, four centers.
Yeah.
I don't think I can remember that one happening.
No.
That's a new one in the same year. That's going on right now.
No, I think Len Haas played for about 15 years, never missed a game. But, you know, that's just the way of the world, and they are adapting, and that's part of their story, that you're down to your fourth center, you have no kicker, and you found a way to win. And, you know, I think if Kendall Fuller doesn't make that interception, there's no way they win that game because – you don't have the kicker in the overtime, and the momentum has totally shifted off what I think was a bad call on the Logan Thomas, which should have been a touchdown there.
It was really close. It was kind of hard to tell. I mean, one angle looked like he still kind of had that the ball was moving with his hand underneath it, and then the other one looked like the ground had touched it. I don't know. I mean, that was a hard one. I was actually surprised they overturned it because it didn't look clear to me that they could overturn it, but they did. And I think the MVP of the team this year is the offensive line in general, just as a whole. I don't think I can remember this much shuffling that didn't break a group. And with a couple of minor exceptions, like in the Denver game, I think one of the lost storylines of the missed opportunities was Sadiq Charles was pretty much exposed as the right tackle, but he was their third right tackle, you know, they had to play because Cornelius Lucas was out and Sam Cosby was hurt. And so they were down to the third right tackle, and he got exposed by a very good defensive line that day. Outside of that particular moment, this offensive line has really held it together for them. And here they are on center number four, and, you know, Barrett Sheriff's been out for, you know, 4 to 6 weeks, finally comes back. Right tackle's been in and out, you know, the last 6 weeks. I'm amazed that it has not completely fallen apart. And then consider all the other parts that have been kind of been shuffling in and out, in and around them, and it's a backup quarterback. I mean, if I was to name an MVP right now, it's this offensive line just kind of as a unit, as a whole. The depth has really carried them here, and it's kept them afloat. Mm-hmm. So here we are with meaningful football in December.
Right, and we had two holding penalties on Brandon Sheriff last night. I can't remember that. You know, he's an all-pro. He's not just a pro bowler, and they overcame that. It's just one thing after another that they were able to do. The other thing I think on the other side is defense. What Landon Collins has done in embracing, he doesn't like to be called a linebacker, but essentially right. He is the Buffalo nickel. And Rivera had a great comment about that. He said, just call him a safety once in a while, make him smile.
Yeah.
But he's, you know, he forced that fumble. And that was huge, too, because if Seattle has the ball and they score a touchdown before the end of the half, then you got a 14-3 game and this long drive offense that you're winning with, you can't really go to that because you got to score pretty quickly.
They wanted to move him earlier in the offseason. Mm-hmm. He balked at it. They didn't want to release him or anything like that. They wanted to make him happy. They were trying to appease him. And I think really one of the big surprises for him in the summer for me was, people forget, he was coming off an Achilles injury.
Right.
Which happened in the middle of the year. Sometimes that can take a year to recover from. He looked fast in training camp. He looked like he did last night, like fast. So clearly there was a space for him on the field. I'm with you on the label stuff. I've never understood why this is such a big deal. Like, they played a guy who, what's Jamal Adams last night? Is he a linebacker? Is he a safety?
Right.
What is he? You tell me. You know, they played Derwin James earlier this year. What's he really? Is he a what is he? What position does he play? You tell me. And Landon Collins could be that for this team. It kind of has been. And I don't, like, it's no disrespect, but he's better closer to the line. He makes more plays when he's closer to the line. And with John Bostic out, and that position group is probably the biggest overall liability of the team. The fact that he needs to kind of play there to help them makes all the sense in the world. So I'm with Rivera here, and I've kind of felt this way for months. Just call him whatever he needs to hear to be called to make him happy, and because he's going to show up and he's going to play for them. And it wasn't just last night. He's been really good for about 3-4 weeks running, and I think he and Cam Curl making plays on the back end or either closer to the line as kind of pseudo linebacker slash safety slash Buffalo nickel slash playmakers has been the difference in the defense to me.
No question.
The secondary, it's been them. And those guys playing deep early, they were a liability, playing closer to the line, they're forcing the issue, and all of a sudden this team looks like the defense from a year ago.
Yeah, it totally flipped. And what did Seattle go, 4-for-12 last night on third down? That was a huge issue in the first part of the season. That doesn't seem to be. They went 5 straight 3-and-outs.
They punted on 6 straight possessions. That hadn't happened in the NFL this year.
Oh, I mean, really?
They sucked the life out of them last night. And honestly, the fact that that score ended up being what it was, that would have been one of the most lopsided, lucky wins in the history of the NFL if they'd given them that onside kick and somehow kicked a field goal to beat them at the end of the game. I mean, the stat sheet tells you everything you need to know, and if you were just kind of sitting there watching it, they took the soul out of that team, and it was amazing. And it really, because they didn't have a kicker, was the only reason why that they were in a situation where it was a one-score game.
Yeah, oh yeah, it would have been a routine, you know, 17-10 win, or you know, 17-7
or more. I mean, at the end of the game, they would have kicked a game-sealing field goal at the 3-yard line,
right?
Or earlier when they had like third downs, third and shorts. That's one issue. They couldn't convert third and shorts last night. And that was a problem. That had reared up earlier in the season. That was a problem last night. Had they converted any of those and converted any of those into points, this would have been a blowout. Like, really?
Yeah.
I mean, the third quarter was kind of careening towards they were going to blow them out, but because they were limited in options and had a few execution problems on third and shorts most notably, the score just kind of remained close, which left it open for a crazy ending, which they got.
Which they got, and we're talking to Bram Weinstein, voice of the team. You called the Fuller interception perfectly in the end, saying they've got to survive the kickoff. And you were 100% right. And you know, as Steve Levy's calling it on TV, well, they're lining up, but, you know, onside kicks are just about impossible. They've only converted 4 in the league this year. And then, boom, You know, and you look at this and you go, I've kind of seen Washington do this before, not this year necessarily, but this is this on recovering onside kicks, which are hard to do now. They're not really good at it.
No, they're not. And you know, D'Angelo kept pointing this out. And I agree with him. Why a linebacker, Jordan Kanashik, was standing up on the line, first kind of line of defense to catch a, you know, where's the hands team?
And he ducked. He ducked.
Yeah. Well, where's the hands team here? You know, like, so I thought he was right. I mean, I think that was surprising. So that was a misstep and obviously nearly burned them. They got very lucky that was some kind of illegal formation that I couldn't even explain. It looked like Pete Carroll was going to go apoplectic about it, and I don't blame him. That was pretty good execution by Seattle, too. He did that twice, where he ran up and then turned and kicked it perfectly to the other side of the field and somehow caught them off guard. So, you know, listen, there are things to button up here, but the bottom line is they're winning. You know, they're winning, and in most of the parts that, you know, you should feel really positive about, like time of possession and the defense is limiting, you know, teams to a certain amount of yards and a bunch of three and outs, which they got none of early in the season. Heinicke, once again, extremely effective, doesn't make really many mistakes whatsoever. Very clutch again when they put the ball in his hands. Gibson, workhorse last night. Terrific for them, short of the third and shorts that they didn't, you know, put together. There's a lot to like here. What I don't like and what I think is BS of all BS is go look at the schedule and how it lined up for their opponents
over
the next few weeks.
Yeah.
It's terrible. Like, I get it if, like, the Raiders were coming here. But Washington is traveling across the country on a short week to play a team that played 4 days ago. Like, that's ridiculous. And then they're going to turn around and do the same thing with Dallas, who's playing on Thursday. They're going to play here 3 extra days. And then they're going to get Philly off a bye week, first time they play them in the middle of December. That's some BS scheduling, if you ask me, really. And so I know while everybody is really, really excited, I am too, you know, about what's going on here. I feel it that people are going to overlook this thing this weekend and go, well, you know, the Raiders are really up and down, and they're just going to go win out there because Dallas is the earmarked game. Don't fall into that.
Yeah.
Like, if they pull off winning out there, it's going to be as big a win as any of the ones that they've had over the last month, just based on the Raiders have 4 extra days. They're at home. They're not on a short week. And Washington is extraordinarily beat up going out there to that game. It's going to take a monumental effort to pull that thing off to make this Dallas game really, really, really matter in a couple of weeks.
All that said, and I watched most of the Thanksgiving game where the Raiders beat the Cowboys, and because of the game last night, I watched Red Zone Channel all day Sunday. I don't think it's a stretch to say that Taylor Heinicke is playing better than the other three quarterbacks in the league right now, in the division. That right now, if you had to pick a quarterback to play a game from the four, you might pick him.
He just beat 2 former MVPs and another one who should have won one by this point in his career in a row.
Yeah, you're talking about one of the highest paid quarterbacks in Dak Prescott. You're talking about the first pick or the first quarterback taken in the draft a couple of years ago in Daniel Jones and Jalen Hurts, who had some big games over the past 2 years. I mean, it's really remarkable.
I mean, this team, let's see, the streak on Monday Night Football is they had lost 7 in a row. Mm-hmm. That ended last night. This is like the 3rd or 4th straight primetime game they've won. You know, so all of those things are trending differently. Stage isn't too big for them. You know, there's another conversation about Russell Wilson. Like, he clearly isn't right.
Right.
Like, there's something wrong. He came back too early. He's not right. They knew this coming in. Like, his fingers messed up. Like, the deep passing game for him is off. He has no real range. He also got fooled into making it. There should have been 3-4 interceptions in the second half yesterday. They dropped a couple of clear picks that were thrown to them. So something's up with him, but that's their problem, and that's their story. With Heinicke, listen, the guy, we're on a joyride with this guy now. And, you know, I just think at this point, forget what's going to happen next year. Who cares? Like, let's see where we're going to go with this guy right now, because we're in this right now. And I thought the way Roy Rivera really got into it after the game, I'm sure you saw the clips of him in the locker room.
Yeah.
But I liked what he said, because we need everybody in the room. That's what this feels like. They really need everybody in the room. There's not a lot of divas on this team. Like, there's no demanding of the ball. They are versatile. I mean, it's funny. Like, I watched these other teams that they played. Like, take Seattle last night, where they've got this MVP-caliber quarterback, you know, when he's healthy. And they've got this monster receiver who, for some reason, they never targeted last night. For whatever reason,
Metcalf,
they didn't do that.
DJ Metcalf, it's weird. He didn't get a ball till the fourth quarter, right?
No, they didn't even target him to the second half, which was crazy, right? So, but think about them for a moment, and think about, like, when they put out their unit on the field, and this is the way I felt going into it, Who scares you outside of Metcalf and Lockett, who gets lost in coverage? Nobody. They have a pedestrian run game. Their tight end's fine, but he's a pedestrian player. Nobody scares you. Washington, when they put everybody out there, and it's completely under the radar, there are four or five guys on any given play that can hurt you badly. Like, they're versatile. McKissick, hopefully he's healthy. Gibson, McLaurin, now Samuel's back. Logan Thomas, the other receivers that they just toss in there at times. They could hurt you with all of these people. And I think the most amazing part of it is they keep shuffling people in and out. They keep getting through injuries. They got a quarterback with a limited amount of experience, and it's all kind of working. And I got to tell you, they're an extremely, extremely dangerous team when it is really kind of humming along.
Yeah, and it's amazing because the names you just mentioned outside of Samuel all got a yawn when they came in here.
That's right.
Unlike the old days, you know, when Deion Sanders would come in a $1,000 suit and, you know, all the splashes
Think about the three big money guys that they've got the last few years. Landon Collins, which predates this administration, William Jackson, Curtis Samuel. Samuel's barely played. Jackson was receiving a ton of criticism earlier this year. Landon Collins has gone through a lot of criticism, albeit that he's playing better now. Who are the people they've hit on? All these bargain players. Eric Flowers, Wes Schweitzer, Logan Thomas, J.D. McKissick, Taylor Heineke. They've brought in Adam Humphries. Like, they brought in all of these kind of lower tier, under the radar, aren't going to be on the front page of ESPN.com. They've hit on all of them. They've hit on all of them. They have a very deep team. There were two things that I thought would be true about them this year. I thought their defense would be a lot better than it was, you know, the first month of the season. They'd be really competitive again. Maybe not number two in the league, but they'd be really competitive again. We're finally kind of seeing this. The hole might be too deep, but we're finally seeing that again. And the other thing that was obvious was they were a way deeper team than they were and have been in years. And I think it's the main reason why they are where they are. One, Heineke's addictive and he's playing really, really well. But two, they get injuries, it doesn't kill them.
Yep.
45 to 53, they have real players behind these guys, specifically on the offensive line and obviously even on the defensive line. They are laughably deep on the defensive line coming in this year, which is why they can lose two stud players and it doesn't completely ruin the unit entirely. It's really amazing.
Yeah, and just to underline that, remember when Shanahan came in here, but he cut like 20 players and none of them ever got another opportunity in the league again, which shows you the kind of depth that they used to have versus what they've got now. Yeah, that's a great point.
You know, I think in New England, too, it's the same thing. I mean, let's say they had Tom Brady, so that's, you know, that's kind of unfair. He's an all-timer, but that's been their whole thing. For years and years, they wouldn't pay guys that they want to pay them because they'd rather have three more guys at the bottom of the roster. 45 to 53, they're better than most teams. Washington's heading in that direction, and they're close. I mean, they're very, very, very close. There are one or two playmaking-type players, but I'm not even sure that they don't already have the guys that can kind of emerge into that. Gibson's becoming that. McKissick is that for them. McLaurin's the number one. Samuel went on the field as a dangerous player. They're a really versatile, dangerous team. They're a linebacker or two and potentially another corner or two away from being what looks to be a very complete team if they have an answer at quarterback, which we'll find out, you know. But, again, let's just enjoy this. I mean, this guy is really playing. He's not scared of any of this competition. And this has been fun, and he's been outstanding.
Yeah. Happy Hanukkah. It's going good.
Yeah, you too.
Talk to you next week. Thanks, Bram.
Yeah. Yep.
That's Bram Weinstein. You're hearing this afternoon from 3 to 6 here on ESPN 630. Yes, I've seen some of his tweets about the schedule. He's right about that. But there's also the other side of this, that they're on a roll right now. They're hot. And, you know, the Raiders have been off since Thanksgiving Day, and maybe there is a layer of rust to some degree. I don't know. You know, I mean, he's right that they're a banged up team and they're going to be, you know, kind of dragging into Vegas. But yeah, this is an incredible roll that they're on right now, winning three straight games and the way that they have done it and surviving without a kicker last night for half the game and finding a way to win. Coming up, 50 years ago today, the movie that made it okay for guys to cry. We'll get to that as we continue. It's the Andy Pollin Hour, ESPN 630. Tony's coming up at 11 o'clock. His guest today is Mitch Albom, who has a new book out. Should be a very, very interesting conversation from 11 to 12. The Washington football team has created a lot of conversation this morning. The update is that they need a new kicker again. Joey Sly injured his hamstring last night, and they'll be on to their fourth kicker as they go to Vegas this weekend. Sly's going to be out for at least 3 weeks, according to Coach Ron Rivera. It was 50 years ago today that an ABC movie of the week appeared
which was a game changer for a lot of guys, that it was okay to cry. I was, let's see, 50 years ago, I was 13 years old, so I wasn't an adult yet, but I do remember this. This was on a Tuesday night that Brian's song premiered on ABC, and the night before, of course, was Monday Night Football. It's only the second year of Monday Night Football, and this was a really big deal. Monday Night Football had burst on the scene and become a part of pop culture in a huge way with Dandy Don. Frank Gifford was doing his first year as play-by-play, and, of course, Howard Cosell. And Cosell said during the game, "There's a movie that's on tomorrow night, and I watched it with others, and there was not a dry eye in the house." And I thought, well, I wonder what this is all about. And it was a subject that I was familiar with because I had read a book about Brian Piccolo, and it was based on a book that Gale Sayers wrote called I Am Third, which came out in 1970. It was his autobiography, and it talked to, in the book, it was not what the book was all about, but there was a couple of chapters about his relationship with Brian Piccolo, a white running back from the South, and they became roommates, which was very unusual at the time for black and white players to room together, and they became great friends. And sadly, Brian Piccolo died of cancer and was only 26 years old, left behind, I think, three daughters, and it's just a horrible, horrible thing that even today brings tears to people in the Chicago Bears organization. So this movie of the week was produced, and this was sort of a new concept for ABC, that they were making movies made just for television. At the time, most of the movies that you saw on network TV, and there were only three network channels, ABC, NBC, and CBS, they were movies that had run in theaters, and they ran on TV. But this was made specifically to run as a Tuesday night show. I think it was only an hour and a half. And the two stars of that movie were unknown at the time, and they became huge Hollywood stars. Billy Dee Williams played Gale Sayers, and James Caan played Brian Piccolo. Now, what's really interesting, the backstory on this, is Caan was asked to be in the movie several times before he finally agreed. He had already made The Godfather, and while The Godfather didn't come out until a year later, till 1972, he kind of knew that this was going to be a big success. And at the time, you know, television, no, only minor actors did television. The big actors did movies, and he didn't want to be a television actor. And this is the most interesting part of this. The way they convinced him to be in this movie, and he was 29 years old, I think he had played some college football, but was not really a star. He was 29 years old, not that big. But they said, "We're going to film this at the Chicago Bears training camp." And he thought, "Aha, I'll get recognized for my ability. And the Bears are going to sign me to play in the NFL." I've heard him say this. This is unbelievable. So that's the way he got on board to play Brian Piccolo in this movie. And Billy Dee Williams, I think he may have made a movie or two, but was not really well known. And it was magic. And in years since, an Entertainment Weekly poll named it one of the top guy cry films ever made. I still think the scene in Field of Dreams where he asks his dad to have a catch is the most tear-jerking moment in sports movie history. But this had a number of those moments in this movie. None bigger, I think, than this one I'm about to play. I'm going to play the second half of this. And this is based on a true series of events. Brian Piccolo helped Gale Sayers get back on the field after a devastating knee injury in 1968. In those days, they operated on knees with chainsaws. It wasn't the technology that they have today. He made it back on the field. He led the league in rushing with over 1,000 yards and a 14-game schedule for a team that was bad, 1-13. And because of his comeback, he was given the George Halas Courage Award. Halas, the legendary founder of the Bears, and the team every year at a dinner would give out an award in his honor. So it went to Gale Sayers. And this is Billy Dee Williams playing Gale Sayers on the night that he got this George Halas Courage Award, and he gave it to his dying teammate, Brian Piccolo.
"You flatter me by giving me this award. But I say to you here and now, Brian Piccolo is the man of courage who should receive the George S. Halas Award. He's mine tonight. And Brian Piccolo is tomorrow. I love Brian Piccolo. And I'd like all of you to love him too. And tonight, hit your knees. Please ask God to love him.
If you are of a certain age, that has to make the hair on the back of your neck stand up. It does mine. And the movie is narrated by Jack Warden, who plays George Halas in the movie. Now, they play around with the facts a little bit in the one of the scenes where George Halas has to tell Brian Piccolo, Gale Sayers that Piccolo has cancer. It is Halas as the head coach of the team. By that time, Halas had retired as the coach. Jim Dooley was actually the head coach of the team at the time. There's a couple of things that they changed around, but for the time, it was just, I mean, there are people who, like, Wilbon is such a big Bears fan and loved Gale Sayers. He says he can only watch it once. He said he cried so much he couldn't watch it again. And finally, his son was old enough to watch it, and they watched it together. But it is, I'm 63 years old, and I still remember watching that for the first time on our 13-inch black-and-white TV at home and bawling, just, you know. And they released it in the theaters sometime later. It didn't do all that well because so many people had seen it on television. And they did a remake maybe 15 years ago. No. It's this. It's Brian's Song, which came out 50 years ago today. And I remember it so well. And, you just think of the two actors and all they have done since. They were, breakout stars from a TV movie. That James Caan became something of a household name, and Billy Dee Williams had a fabulous career throughout the rest of the 70s into the 80s and 90s. He may even still make some films as far as I know. So when we saw, Sonny Corleone get shot up in the toll booth a year later in The Godfather, you're kind of still thinking of him as Brian Piccolo. And the great scenes and the great banter that he had back and forth with Gale Sayers. If you haven't seen it, go see it. You might say it's outdated. It's 50 years old today. But for people of my generation, Brian's Song, very, very meaningful. It was the ABC movie of the week. And just, I think, in the last year, Gale Sayers passed away, was in his late 70s. And this movie endures as part of his legacy. I want to thank Trevor Maddich for coming on today, as well as Bram Weinstein, who's on with us every Monday, or Tuesday in this case, after games. You'll hear Bram this afternoon from 3 to 6. Thanks to Lauren Durnham for running the show. Thanks to all of you. Listen, Tony is coming up next, and I'll see you tomorrow morning at 10 a.m.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draftaccess to register for free entry today.